Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Exact Thinking in Demented Times, The Vienna Circle and the Epic Quest for the Foundations of Science, by Carl Zygmunt, narrated by Nigel Patterson. I am sitting with a philosopher in the garden. While pointing at a nearby tree, he says several times, "I know that that's a tree." Another person arrives and hears this, and I say, "This fellow isn't nuts. We're just philosophizing." Ludwig Wittgenstein. If we were to open the window so that passers-by could hear us, we would wind up either in jail or in the loony bin. Hans Hahn. 1. Bringing the Vienna Circle into focus. Midnight in Vienna. To do full justice to the story of the Vienna Circle, I'd need to be an artist. But alas, an artist I am not. I just wish I had the magic of Woody Allen to lure you into a taxicab and give you my vision of midnight in Vienna, dropping in spontaneously on various moments in the rich past of my hometown. Most of the time, on climbing out of the cab, you would find yourself somewhere in the interwar years, but now and then you would be somewhere in the wake of World War II, with the theme from The Third Man vaguely humming in the background. And to begin properly, I really would have to carry you all the way back to the years before World War I, with a waltz from The Merry Widow on the soundtrack. Unfortunately, I cannot introduce you to Gustav Klimt, Egon Schiele, and Oskar Kokoschka, or to Otto Wagner and Adolf Loos, or to Dr. Freud and Dr. Schnitzler. You'll just get fleeting glances of them, cameo appearances, through the windows of a brilliantly lit coffee house. Most of the cast of my film, and please don't let this turn you off, consists just of philosophers. They come in many stripes, but what links them all is one absorbing interest, namely science. If you are still with me after this disclosure, then let me briefly sketch the plot. In 1924, philosopher Moritz Schlick, mathematician Hans Hahn, and social reformer Otto Neurath joined forces to launch a philosophical circle in Vienna. At that time, Schlick and Hahn were professors at the University of Vienna, and Neurath was the director of the Vienna Museum for Social and Economic Affairs. From that year on, the circle met regularly on Thursday evenings in a small university lecture hall on a street named after the Austrian physicist Ludwig Boltzmann, where they discussed philosophical questions such as, what characterizes scientific knowledge? Do metaphysical statements have any meaning? What makes logical propositions so certain? Why is mathematics applicable to the real world? The manifesto of the Vienna Circle proclaimed, "The scientific worldview is characterized not so much by theses of its own, but rather by its basic attitude, its points of view, its direction of research." The circle sought to create a purely science-based philosophy, without any highbrow talk of unfathomable depths, and without any otherworldly obscurantism. In science there are no depths. Instead, there is surface everywhere. All experience forms a complex network, which cannot always be surveyed in its totality, and which often can only be grasped in parts. Everything is accessible to man, and man is the measure of all things. The Vienna Circle forged ahead in the tradition of Ernst Mach and Ludwig Boltzmann, two towering physicists who had made great discoveries and had taught philosophy in turn-of-the-century Vienna. The other main guiding lights of the small band of thinkers were the physicist Albert Einstein, the mathematician David Hilbert, and the philosopher Bertrand Russell. Before long, a thin volume that had just been published came to dominate the discussions of the Vienna Circle. This was the Tractatus Logico-Philosophicus, written by Ludwig Wittgenstein during his military service in the trenches of World War I. Wittgenstein, after renouncing his huge inheritance, had become a teacher in an elementary school in rural Lower Austria. After a while, however, he began talking with a few members of the Vienna Circle, and this link gradually brought him back to philosophy. The Vienna Circle wanted to have nothing to do with hallowed and often stuffy philosophical traditions. The scientific worldview knows no unsolvable riddles. Clarification of the traditional philosophical problems sometimes leads to their unmasking as pseudo-problems, and other times converts them into empirical problems, which can thereby be subjected to the methods of experimental science. The task of philosophical work lies in this type of clarification of problems and statements, rather than in the crafting of special philosophical statements. Brilliant newcomers joined the group, such as philosopher Rudolf Carnap, mathematician Karl Menger, and logician Kurt Gödel. These three in particular were eventually to radically redefine the border regions between philosophy and mathematics. The philosopher Karl Popper, too, became closely connected with the Vienna Circle, although he never was invited to its meetings. The Circle quickly became the world centre of the movement called Logical Empiricism. Leading thinkers in Prague, Berlin, Warsaw, Cambridge, and Harvard picked up the threads of its discussions. In 1929, the Vienna Circle embarked on a new public presence through its own journals, conferences, books, and lecture series. This significant shift was heralded by a manifesto titled The Scientific Worldview. The manifesto was not so much a birth certificate, after all, Schlick's circle had already existed for 5 years, as it was a christening. The name Vienna Circle, proposed by Otto Neurath, was new, and was meant to evoke positive associations, such as Vienna Woods or Viennese Waltz, and also was intended to serve as a trademark. The content of the manifesto was a signpost announcing not only a new philosophical school, but also a new social and political agenda. The scientific worldview serves life, and life embraces it. The authors of the manifesto belonged to the left wing of the small group, and they made no secret of their ardent wish to thoroughly reform society. The Ernst Mach Society, founded by members of the Vienna Circle in 1928, was dedicated to the spreading of the scientific worldview. It sided with social democratic Red Vienna in the political struggle for reforms, especially in housing and education. Despite its name, Red Vienna, or Rotes Wien in German, was not a communist movement, but simply the nickname for Vienna in the period under the Social Democrats, which lasted from 1918 through 1934. Coffee and cigars. It wasn't long before the Vienna Circle and the Ernst Mach Society had become favourite targets for the anti-Semitic and right-wing currents that existed in Vienna. The political ambience was growing increasingly menacing. During this second public phase, the Vienna Circle slowly disintegrated. Carnap moved to Prague, Wittgenstein to Cambridge. After the Austrian Civil War of 1934, Neurath was barred from returning to Austria. In that same year, Hahn died unexpectedly. Young Gödel repeatedly had to spend time in psychiatric hospitals. In 1936, Schlick was assassinated on the steps of the main building of the university by a former student. Soon after that, Menger and Popper, disgusted by the prevailing public mood, opted for emigration. Most members of the Vienna Circle left Vienna well ahead of the so-called cleansing following the Anschluss, the annexation of Austria by the Third Reich, but not all of them. In the war year of 1940, Kurt Gödel, against all odds, finally arrived in the United States as a straggler. He had had to get there the long way round, via Siberia, Japan, and the vast Pacific. The Vienna Circle, by that time very famous, had lost its Viennese roots, and it did not regain them after World War II. However, it was able to find shelter in Anglo-Saxon countries, and from there it exerted a seminal influence on the intellectual and scientific history of the 20th century, decisively shaping analytical philosophy, formal logic, and economic theory. For example, the algorithms and computer programs that pervade our daily lives can be traced all the way back to the abstract investigations of Russell, Gödel, and Carnap into symbolic logic and computability. Tales of murder and suicide, of love affairs and nervous breakdowns, of political persecution and hair's-breadth escapes, all have their place in the rich tapestry of the Vienna Circle. But the tapestry's main thread is the unbroken stream of heated debates among its members. In no way was the circle the intellectual collective that a few of its members had hoped it would become, nor was it the congregation that its opponents accused it of being. It teemed with vociferous controversies and silent misgivings. How can it be otherwise when philosophers meet? At the beginning of the tale, near the dawn of the 20th century, in the lecture hall of the Vienna Academy, physicists Ludwig Boltzmann and Ernst Mach conducted a highly publicized debate on the burning question, "Do atoms exist?" At the tale's conclusion, 1 year after World War II had ended, a fierce clash between Karl Popper and Ludwig Wittgenstein took place in a plush Cambridge sitting room on the burning question, "Do philosophical problems exist?" In the 50-odd years between these two deeply symbolic debates, the role that Vienna played in philosophy was as seminal as its role in music had once been. The Vienna Circle stood in the centre of that extraordinary period of intellectual flourishing, a shining pinnacle of exact thinking set against a backdrop of wild fanaticism and maniacal stupidity. Our valiant philosophers were well aware of standing on the perilously listing deck of a sinking ship, but this only lent greater urgency to their discussions, which dealt with the limits to knowledge. There seemed to be little time left. Some of the musicians were already packing up their instruments. Today, it feels like a long time ago that the ship went down. In the current era, millions of scientists and hundreds of millions of their kith and kin take the scientific worldview pretty much for granted. If pressed, they will admit that it may be threatened in various ways, by religious fundamentalists of all creeds, by a debilitating flood of trash culture, or simply by an epidemic lack of public interest. Compared with all the other threats we face, the danger to science probably does not seem urgent. However, as the Vienna Circle's story shows, things can change quickly. The entire epic of the rise and fall of the Vienna Circle spans less than half a century. A coffeehouse waiter could have witnessed it all from a ringside seat, so to speak. As a young piccolo, he would have served an Einspänner mit Schlag to the portly Hofrat Ernst Mach, the darling of waltz-giddy imperial Vienna. And, as an elderly, stooping Herr Ober, he would have commiserated with a grim-faced Wittgenstein on the undrinkability of the post-war Ersatzcafé. If I were a Jim Jarmusch, I would convey the waiter's tale through a series of short episodes forming a movie called Coffee and Cigars. But alas, I'm not an artist, just an elderly, stooping professor who grew up in the shadow of the circle. And so I'll simply tell you its story from the beginning, as best I can.